Blog Talk Radio.
Oh no, on it tonight. Hello, hello, hello. Time to elaborate. Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I really want to welcome you tonight to a wonderful virtual trip to the beautiful island of Jamaica, land we love. So I see that I do have a caller on the board, and I want to announce to the other callers that may come by later on that tonight, actually, we are doing a rebroadcast of one of our very popular shows. So I'll be on for a couple of minutes, but then we are going to rebroadcast a show that we did on when we started the island tour. I think we build it, discover Jamaica one parish at a time. And for those visitors who might not know the history of our island, we now have 14 beautiful parishes, each distinctive in the way it is, the things they do there, and what it's known for. So as we go through the series, you'll be learning lots of things about all 14 parishes if I decide to rerun all 14. But tonight, we're going to go back to the one we did on Kingston, which happens to be my hometown. And between you and I, it's the most popular parish on the island because it's the capital of Jamaica. So I ask you to relax in your favorite chair. Just pretend you're in your favorite spot on the island, whether it's on the beach, on the terrace, in your backyard, or wherever. But whether it's hot in your city, I know you can feel the trade winds drifting softly across your face. So when this show was done live, we did have a co-host who was Donna Robinson, and I'm going to pick up on her checking in with us. And you'll have a beautiful hour of just hearing all about Kingston. So I welcome you. For those who are listening online who might not have been there when we did that show, I'm sure you will enjoy it. So I'm going to plug her in now. So just give me a break. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Blog Talk Radio. This segment is Backyard Labrish. We're here each week at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And this show is about the Jamaica before independence, because most of my fans, including myself, are really senior citizens, sort of old. And for me, I have not really a lot of experience or no experience at all about Jamaica since it has been independent. I have not lived there for any considerable length of time, but I do remember and love and celebrate the independence when it's here also. But this show is about the time when I grew up in Jamaica, and even before my time, I tried to bring some voice to a lot of the history that has been dug up by some of our historians, that some of them have been pieced together, and they're wonderful articles that if you're a historian or you like history or you want to find out, you can always go to Pieces of the Past, which is published by the Jamaica Gleaner Company, and the historian there is Dr. Tortello, Rebecca Tortello, and she has some wonderful pieces, and whenever I gather information about any of the subjects that I talk about, I usually go there or go to Dr. Joy Lumsden's website, which is Joy Jam. And there's a lot of wonderful information that she has put together about the past. So without any further ado, I would like to invite you to just relax and pretend that you're on the island. And remember, I think now it's mango time. So for me, I'll be eating my favorite mango, which will be an East Indian, and I will be just enjoying it as I listen to the broadcast of last year. So hang with me while I think we're going to start with Donna Robinson, who was our co-host at that time.
I didn't realize, one of the things that was kind of interesting is that when you sent the blast out, it said parish, that there were 14-plus parishes in Jamaica. And that's kind of how they refer to the various districts in Louisiana as parishes.
Really?
As opposed to, like, you know, we have everything here is like counties, and some places say they're districts. But
okay, well, that's interesting because Jamaica originally didn't start off with 14 parishes. You know, in the early days, they had three sections: Cornwall, Middlesex, and Surrey, like three divisions.
Mm-hmm.
That were, you know, that was for politics and just how the island was divided.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing also is that Kingston was not the capital when it was under Spanish rule. It was Spanish Town. Now, what I'm not sure of, and I guess I'll find that, or if any of our listeners can fill me in, is that I don't think, Kingston is the smallest parish. I don't know if anybody knew that, but we're the smallest parish, and it has St. Andrew and all different parts. I mean, Port Royal is part of Kingston, really. However, I'm not sure what parish Spanish Town is, but by the time I get to that parish, I'm sure I'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
Kingston became the capital in 1670. After the Spanish, you know, the English took it over from the Spanish. Jamaica was officially given to Britain by a treaty in Madrid. No wonder I was so fascinated with Madrid. Somehow I feel connected. I told you, Donna, that when I went to Europe, I looked up online for some family, whatever, and decided to stay in their place, bed and breakfast, for days, just because I'll just looking on the map and having to sail out to Barcelona, I just was fascinated by Madrid. I didn't even know before that was the official, you know, everything about Jamaica actually started there, as it in terms of handing it over to the British, which is the regime that I was raised under and can really connect to that. So that's the first thing that was intriguing to me. So in 1670, I suppose the British conquered the Spanish, so the official documentation was done in Madrid. And that's when the capital was moved from Spanishtown to Kingston, which is where I was born and raised. And I hope there'll be some Kingstonians on both online and on the phone enjoying this lavish, because I am certainly enjoying it. But just a little bit about Spanishtown, you know, during its heyday, I mean, Jamaica on a whole, I mean, some things I'm finding out about notorieties, people of, you know, of prominence in all over the world, somehow at some time was connected to Jamaica. Not necessarily, you know, their names, but been there, established something, did something, because further on in the lavish, I'm going to talk about a captain on a ship that did some remarkable things during the earthquake. And we've had several major disasters that were publicized all over the world at during those periods as the worst in history, which perhaps a lot of Jamaicans are not familiar with. So the first thing we're doing is going back to the capital being moved from Spanishtown to Kingston. Now, I want to make a note about that to the listeners, that I lived in Spanishtown for a period of time, and I was always fascinated. I've always been fascinated with history by some of the buildings that I remembered as a child, because I was fairly young during the period that my father was a minister there. I must have been about perhaps between 8 and 10 or 5 and 10, I can't remember, but I remember these beautiful buildings. Then there were signs of decay. But I can see why at that time, you know, when you're that little, you're not learning about history. So I didn't even know that Spanishtown was the original capital of the island. And I'm going to ask any of our listeners that might be online if they know anything about, or if they learned anything about the history of Spanishtown, if it's part of what parish it's in, they can let me know. So I could be a little clearer on the transfer, you know, of the capital from there to here. I mean, here, meaning that I think I'm still in Kingston. You know what I mean, Dada? So anyway, a lot of things. I'm sure that some of our listeners that are not Jamaican might not know that because of how Jamaica is located, it was a great port for piracy. It's funny that there's so much piracy going on now, you know.
Yeah.
It's so funny. But Port Royal, you know, housed a lot of famous, very famous pirates, some of who even became respectable citizens on the island. One even became a governor. You know, he went from being an outright thief to being a governor. So, you know, even in those days, you know, those things were happening.
Yeah, but you know what? That's kind of like today. You know, a lot of times the elections get stolen. So, you know, he just...
right. Well, so a lot of things went on in Spanishtown. Mm-hmm. And as I remember it as a young person growing up, that's where they hung, I don't know if they're still hanging, but they hung the people who were sentenced to death. It was not in Kingston, it was in Spanishtown, so I suppose that's where they had the facilities to do that. But then Kingston took over in terms of politics and everything else. But I was reading something in some of my research where in the, you know, days of the piracy and Spanishtown being the capital, that this particular governor, Henry Morgan, a lot of Jamaicans, we learned about him. He complained about the cost of his clothes being, here they have it as $1,000, but I suppose they just, you know, converted it to today's money. Now, all distinguished visitors would have to be received by the governor, and they would put on some big thing, you know, I don't know if they paid to go to this thing, whatever they had. But he was complaining that he had to get dressed up and his clothes was costing him too much money. But anyway, I want to start off with Kingston. And the reason I chose Kingston, not just because it's where I was born and raised, but because it's the capital of the whole island. And it is considered a parish, even though it's the smallest parish of all 14 parishes. And we have had some very, very interesting things that I'm going to talk about. So our board is all lit up. And again, I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labbers on Blog Talk Radio. We're here every Wednesday at 8 o'clock. And for the next 14 weeks or more, we're going to be taking a tour of our beloved island of Jamaica, and we are going to explore each parish individually and dig up some history and give you some tidbits. And if you're from that parish and have some stories about the customs or what happened when you were growing up, we would love for you to share it with the rest of us. For instance, as a Kingstonian, my mother was from Westmoreland, whose capital is Savlamar. And that's the place I went to visit during the summer or any time. So I don't know much about any other parish or any other capital of the parish. You know, so I don't know if other Jamaicans have that similar experience where they don't know a lot about different parts of the island, except, you know, what comes from where in terms of our foods and things that we grow on the island. I mean, we know that, but not much of anything else. So, Donna, let me ask you, did you do any research that you want to share with us?
Well, I did do some research. One of the things that I don't know if anyone's interested about, but when you sent the information to me, you said that there were 14-plus parishes, and one of the things that it said was that Jamaica once had 22 parishes, and that the other 8 parishes pretty much were merged into the 14 parishes in one way or another, and it kind of breaks them down in terms of the number, in terms of the population, and I thought that was pretty interesting.
Right, because I suppose in terms of politics, you know, if you don't have enough people in one area, then it's hard to administer, I suppose, things to that area, and it's better to merge them into an area where there's more activity going on.
Right.
But here's a tip for our foreign listeners, or not a tip, but some information. You know, Jamaica has done so much for the world, you know, and the world, almost there's hardly anybody anywhere that has not heard something about Jamaica. It's music, it's people, it's athletes, you know, something. But do you know, Donna, that our island is about 50 miles wide and 150 miles long?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that sounds tiny, you know, but it didn't seem tiny to me when I was growing up. Now, the north coast is about 100 miles south of Cuba and 100 miles west of Haiti. And we were a British colony from 1655 until 1958. It became a fully independent state in 1962. So most of the information that I am sharing is before 62, because I migrated to the United States in 1959. So I don't know the independent Jamaica as much as I know the Jamaica under British rule. So tonight I want to talk about some features of Kingston that I remembered as a child and can relate to. But the first one is the tram car. I remembered as a youngster growing up in the eastern part of Kingston, there was an Avenue tram. And let me just tell you a little bit about the tram car. Actually, We call it the tram car, and I didn't even know it. That's the way it was called. But in my research, I found that there is a gentleman who I'd like to give some credit to. I think his name is Morrison. He published an article and some pictures, Alan Morrison. Beautiful pictures of these trams as I remember them, and they were being circulated on the, you know, on the email. People, one person would send it. I don't remember who I got it from, but I was so intrigued because I remember what the tram cars looked like in my mind, you know, but they were out of business by the time I left Jamaica. But I'd never seen any pictures before, you know, actually a printed picture anywhere. I mean, this might say, sound strange to you, Donna, but I didn't. I don't remember ever seeing one. And then I read that the a steam railroad that opened in 1845. I didn't even know that's when the train started. That was long ago, in 1845. No. Let me go back here. Yeah, Kingston. It ran from Kingston to Spanish Town. And listen to this. It was the first railroad in the Americas, preceded only by lines in the U.S., Canada, and Cuba. Mm. Kingston's population was about 50,000 in 1900. It's now about 100,000 today. But the Jamaica Streetcar Company inaugurated a horse car system in Kingston on November 13, 1876. Trams circled the central area and reached Raytown on the east, Maypen Cemetery on the west. That wouldn't mean anything to you, but a lot of Kingstonians can relate to that. And just people from the country, you know, Kingston was always, it would be like New York then, you know, where everybody wants to go. That's sort of the hub of everything. So even visitors, people who came, just like how I would go to Sablemar for summer, people living in different parts of the country, if they had relatives or friends in Kingston, they would come to Kingston during the summer. It's sort of, you know, just like you would go to New York or to Las Vegas or whatever. Mm-hmm. So they can relate to these names. And, you know, it sounds so small to you, and it is when I look at the whole island now, and remember things, but when you're young, it seems so big. You know, it seems humongous. And I remember that the greatest thrill I might have been, I don't remember when I started, I was allowed to ride the trams alone, but I remember there was a beauty seat. And you know what that beauty seat was? Yes. It was a seat at the front of the trams. You had two seats that faced each other, like all the seats are in a row, right? But there's this one that is looking at all the others.
Oh.
And that would be called the beauty seat. So if you're dressed up in your pretty clothes and you really want to show off, that's the seat. You hope there's space on that seat because it's always crowded for the people who want to show off, you know what I mean? So as a youngster, I remember going, and we would go on a Sunday afternoon, and it would circle, go around in a circle, similar to 285 here in Atlanta, you know, where it goes around in a circle.
Yeah.
Only it would be so scenic. It was just absolutely beautiful because it went by the water, and then it went by different buildings. So, you know, you just ride on it just to have a relaxed afternoon. So it was a treat to be able to go. And I remember taking especially one of my younger cousins, and her mother would get her dressed up, and she would be so pretty, and I'd be so, you know, happy to take her so we could sit in the beauty seat. But it was the first mode of public transportation that we had there, and it started in 1845. Now, look at the sad part of it, Donna. Mm. Do you know that all of those trams, they became electrical cars afterwards, And the company, you know, that started them actually was a Canadian company. I don't know if it was by a Jamaican, but, you know, the company itself was in Canada. And the, all of those cars were scrapped. They were in perfect condition. Perfect condition. I mean, they would take you to the, you know, most of the important places in Jamaica at that time was Hope Gardens, you know, the Carib Theater, the Ward Theater, and all those. These are all places that older Jamaicans can remember and relate to, you know, where you would, it's a pleasure to go. Now, all of that have changed. We're not really going to talk about all those changes tonight, but it was.
So you're kind of saying that it kind of, it could have probably been like San Francisco where they still have the trolleys that go down the street.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Exactly so.
Wow.
But Alan Morrison, who did this article and got these beautiful pictures from postcards, and apparently, I don't know if he's doing some historic thing on Jamaica. I actually emailed him and only to find out that he's not even Jamaican. He said he is to Port Antonio once. He went on a cruise. But, you know, through his generosity, we had access to some gorgeous pictures of the trams and the information on the area that it covered, and really some good historic information about it. And it's similar to what that you have in San Francisco, you know, because I've been on those, and it was so thrilling when I rode on it because it reminded me of my younger days. I see a hand raised, and I'm going to open up the mic to 646-479. In a minute, you're on. Oh, no, you're off. Hold on. Our computer is acting a little crazy tonight. So if you just bear with us for a minute, we'll get our mic opened. There you go. Good evening. This is flipping back and forth. Good evening. You're on Backyard Libraries. Who am I speaking with?
From the Bronx.
Ooh, welcome back, Mr.
The home of the New York Yankees.
Okay, don't rub it in. We're talking about Kingston.
Hello, Donna.
Hello, Lane.
Mm-hmm.
What have you got to say about the tram cars?
I hear you talking about the famous trams that the Jamaica Public Service closed the line in 1948,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was devastated.
Well, I just want to let you
like to hop on the tram and go where I wanted to go.
Right, right.
Did you ever hop a tram? No, you were a girl.
No,
right?
Girls couldn't hop the tram. What's the matter with you? You were wearing trousers, so in those days they were called trousers.
Short pants, if you please.
Yeah. Beg pardon?
Short pants. I didn't have on trousers yet.
Oh, I got you. Okay. But here's an interesting footnote. The Public Service Company closed the Kingston Tramway System May 1948. They claimed that it could not afford to maintain the right-of-way or construct or reconstruction that was needed. The entire system, all lines until the end. Now, company records indicate that because of public protests, the Rockford Garden Lines continued operation for a few more months. Were you one of those protesters?
No, I was too small for that, but I was happy that at least the Rockford line was still going.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, sorry, my voice is gone. 1949, they sold off the whole thing for scrap.
Yes, yes, that's the sad part. It brings me back to the idea that we have to start preserving some things. We, you know, there's so many beautiful buildings in Kingston. When you see the picture of the way it was, you know, Ward Theater, the Coke Church, the different places that are almost in ruins now. And I really think that we are losing so much of our heritage by allowing those places to just go down the tubes, really. And I wish I had enough time, but I'm hoping that some of the younger generation, the next generation, will take up, you know, part of what I would love to do. And some of the Jamaicans that are in Jamaica now, the younger ones, will be more mindful of their past and the history of some of the places that they need to preserve.
Well, do you know, do they have like a history, I mean, kind of like how we have it here in the United States where they designate certain places as historical and then there's grant monies that they can get to preserve those places? Does that not exist there? Or?
Yes, it does. But, you know, because we have so many historic things that need preservation and restoration, it you know, the money can just go that far and no more. So actually, I would love eventually to start something that at least I know that the Institute of Jamaica that, you know, preserves a lot of the documented history. I was reading something where they said that they had some documentation that was so fragile that it could not even be photographed.
Wow.
And, you know, that brings me to the next thing I want to discuss, which is the earthquake. Now, I remember as a child being subjected to a lot of earthquakes in Jamaica. They weren't severe, but I know it wasn't in my head. And as I do the research, I realize that we used to have a lot more earthquakes in the earlier days than they're having now, actually. But there was a big earthquake. Lay, do you remember what year? Do you know what year that earthquake was?
One of the bigger ones was first recorded in 1907.
Right. But do you know there was one in Port Royal before that?
Oh yes, there was. I think I don't remember the exact date, but. The one in Port Royal was 1703, yes.
Right.
See that.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
That
was before the 1907 one.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And that was a biggie. Over 2,000 people died.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were subject to mosquito disease. And it wiped out Port Royal.
Right. And that, a lot of the people, the survivors from Port Royal, then moved into Kingston.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of helped Kingston in a way. But, you know, the first big recorded one was actually the one in Port Royal.
Yeah.
But it was funny because I was reading that prior to, you know, Port Royal was a very wicked city. I mean, there was a lot of everything going on there, you know, prostitution, drinking, swearing, I mean, just looting, you name it. They were vile.
It got that title from the pirate activity, as you alluded to before.
Right.
And, of course, Port Royal was right at the mouth. You know, Jamaica has one of the three best harbors in the world in that they're enclosed harbors. So Kingston is one of the is noted for that.
Oh yes.
And
that's why the plane was able to land there that we discussed the last time.
So that the Port Royal had all those pirates anchoring, coming in, and going crazy after their escapade. You know, you think these pirates now are
bad?
Bad. Those pirates then, when they whip out their swords and things, they better be out of the way.
Right. It was considered the wicked city.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on now to the. To the earthquake of Kingston, the Kingston earthquake of 1907. that was more devastating than the one in Port Royal, because it was a more populated city than Port Royal was at the time. So, I mean, it was, and it just, it, well, earthquakes are always sudden, but I think it was the first big devastation for that area, Kingston, you know, since it was the capital. So it during the time of Port Royal, I don't know that it was, Kingston was the capital yet. What year did you say that was, Leigh?
The Kingston became the capital, what was
that? I announced that date before. I meant the earthquake in Port Royal.
The earthquake? Mm-hmm. 1907.
No, in Port Royal. The Port Royal one was before the Kingston one.
You're talking about Port Royal or the Kingston?
Right, Port Royal.
1703.
Right, well, that was before the 1907 one. So my point is...
The 1907 one leveled a lot of... Donna before mentioned, preservation of buildings and stuff. This earthquake of 1907... destroyed a lot of those buildings that were historical buildings in Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
That had gone up earlier by people, developers, you know. There was a particular developer you probably saw in your research, John Goff. Who was a surveyor, and he mapped out the whole of Kingston.
Right.
And most of his buildings that went up were destroyed in the 1907 earthquake.
Right, and that earthquake was followed by a devastating fire.
Yeah.
But Dr. Joy Lumsden on her website has some very interesting information about, like, human interest stories, you know, that I would suggest that people who love history go by and read. I can just give you a little synopsis of some of them, but they're really, really good. And, you know, she pieces her material from letters, from just different things. But there was one in particular that really stood out to me, and because it relates to today. Do you know that in 1907, we had a King's Council, and for the Jamaicans, you know that is a barrister at law, a black King's Council arguing cases, insurance cases, because the insurance, even then in 1907, was nitpicking between the earthquake and the fire and didn't want to pay some people for their property. And there was this very black King's Council. Now, well, you know that if he was a King's Council then, he had to have studied long before that, you know, in England to be appointed a barrister. But he had to be arguing some of these cases and making decisions on the right of the insured person to get paid by the insurance company. I say to myself, the insurance company been going on with this crap for a long time. You know what I mean? Because now they're still
that was a local AIG.
Right. But an interesting thing that I saw, that there was this one eyewitness report of the earthquake, and this was a Jamaican woman working into a bar downtown. And she talked about how the things were set up on the bar and when they started to shake. And, you know, the measurements were different in those days. We didn't have gallons like we do have now. And so she had to go to court, you know, to talk about whatever she talked about. But and then she told the judge judge that she came out of the building because it was shaking so much. But she went back in the building to retrieve her hat. Her hat. Because in those days, a respectable woman would not be seen without her hat.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? And I said, that's a woman.
Does that go for you too, Mrs. Marshall?
Yeah, well, my hat days are sort of over. I still love my hats anyhow, but I still wear them to the tees and the whatever. But right, Donna? And there were quite a few ladies at the last tea I attended here in Atlanta that was wearing their hats. But I don't know if I'd run back for my hat if I was having an earthquake or a twister like we have here in Georgia. So, you know, that's a different story. But I thought that was quite interesting. Number one, that we had black high court judges or barristers, as they're called in Jamaica, arguing cases from 1907. And it brings me back to a video that I think is being circulated now recently, where one of our local politicians here, I forgot his name, was saying, you know, how intrigued he was when he went to Jamaica. This is perhaps in the 60s, and saw black policemen, because there were not any black policemen here in the South. And it dawned on me all of a sudden that all my life, and I'm quite old, as everybody knows, the senior, I have seen black people in power in the highest level. So, you know, then it made me really realize how fortunate I was to have been born in Jamaica. And I don't know if any of our listeners feel the same way, but it's little things like that that really make me think about my roots and make me very, very proud. You know, in spite of what might be going on in the politics or in what is happening in a negative way in Jamaica now, I can still say that I am very, very, I feel very fortunate to have been born and raised there. I wasn't even thinking, you know, it's just that I'm doing this research that I realized that, you know, 1907, my mother was born in 1912. You know, that was before she was born. And here is this black, and he's really black, very dark skin, arguing cases for the insurance company at the highest level of law. So when you look at the pictures, the old pictures that people are finding on postcards and different things, people like Dr. Joy Lumsden and other researchers, and putting online now, it's so wonderful to see, you know, in those days. But I remember my aunts, when they used to go to parties in Kingston, you know, because I was raised in Kingston, how they would get dressed up in hats and gloves if they were going to a garden party. And now I look back, I said, and the men were all decked out in their suits. How the heck, how uncomfortable they must have been, because it's always been hot in Jamaica. The weather hasn't changed, has it? It wasn't cool then and hot now. But somehow, it was the style of the day, you know, and everybody sort of went along with it. So I just thought it was interesting that in spite of this very horrific earthquake with people dying, and I think 6,000 people died, there's some of the information on Dr. Lumsden's website that said that people mistook some heaps, piles as piles of dust, and it was actually piles of bodies. That's how bad it was. And it was, you know, circulated all over the world. People all over the world knew about that disaster. Needless to say, you know, a lot of people came to our aid, including the first ships to get there, of course, were the Americans. I said, even now they're still doing it. They're usually the first to get any place when there's a disaster. But I just thought that was quite interesting. And again, I want to remind our listeners that you're tuned into Blog Talk Radio, and this is the Backyard Labrish. We're here once a week, and we have started our tour around our island. And today we're discussing Kingston. So if you're from Kingston and you want to join the Labrish, please press 1 on your telephone And for the those of you listening online, I apologize. I'm not yet that techie that I can converse with you online and talk at the same time. But pretty soon I'm getting there. I'm going to get somebody to get there. So hang with me. And please visit with us, because you won't know what passion we're going to discuss next week unless you check your email. So with that, Leigh, I'd like to talk about some of the Kingston highlights.
Hmm.
And would you like to guess what my first highlight? There are so many highlights about Kingston that it would perhaps take more than a week to do Kingston. But anyway, what do you think is the most prominent when we were going up? Now, I'm fast-forwarding.
I don't know what it was for you.
Let's
hear it.
I was going to raise my hand. I was going to go, ooh, I know Jamaican stars, but then you said in your era, so I had to, you know, be quiet. But
actually, in Kingston, you know, as a youngster growing up, and I think even the adults, there were two places that, you know, you really wanted to go at some time, and that would be the Ward Theater or Carib. Don't you agree, Leigh?
Yeah.
I know you went to church. I mean, you went to the cathedral, but besides...
No, I did not go to cathedral.
Where did you go?
Holy Rosary.
Oh, I see. Well...
The way I would put it is that I went to St. George's College, and the cathedral was our chapel. It was just maybe a 200-yard walk from the college over to the church.
Ah.
So in that sense, we would, go over there. But that
right.
was my parish. My
well,
parish
another
was.
Big attraction of Kingston now, even more than it was in my growing up day, is Devon House. And do you know that Devon House was owned at one point, until it became what it is now, by the first black millionaire in Jamaica? Were you familiar with that, Leigh?
Yeah.
Okay. And it is. I am so happy that that is one of the historic buildings that is really restored and has retained its glory.
Yeah, that would be one of those that Donna referred to that would have been like, what do they call it, the government sees to the restoration of it.
Right. And
now,
it is...
Now, who is the millionaire? Do you know?
Uh-huh. Is it John is his first name? Stabell?
Sounds right, okay. Yes. Yes, I think that's the name.
Yeah, he's John Stabell. And
his
wife occupied it. I mean, they just lived very well. And it's not only was it a mansion, but, you know, the grounds are beautiful. It just all around is beautiful. But I want to go back to the earthquake for a minute, because I think a lot of people in the diaspora perhaps don't know this. But do you know that there was a special memorial built at Maypen, that, I mean, there was so much thought and money put into it as a memorial for the people who died? Because, you know, in those days, 6,000 people, well, even now, 6,000 people in one disaster is a lot of people. And they were unidentified. Most of them, you know, nobody was there to claim them. So they were buried in trenches. Did you know that, Leigh? I didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that.
They were buried in trenches in Maypen, in trenches. And they built a beautiful memorial. I don't know if it's still standing. Do you know? I would like to know if any of the listeners know anything about this memorial and know if it's still standing in Maypen, because I haven't been to Kingston in perhaps 30 years, I can't remember.
Well,
but
I'm not
going
to check Maypen to see if it's there.
Beg your pardon?
I'm not going to check.
I know.
Maypen
well, that brings me to that. that brings me to that, Leigh, that as a people, as a country, we have allowed a lot of our past to just be desecrated, actually. And I think it's really time for the government or somebody to stop in and say, you know, there's some things that need to be respected and preserved, regardless of you know, what you might like about the past or what you might not like about the past. But there are some things that need to be respected and preserved. So I didn't know that until I did. I think it's in Dr. Lumsden's information that I found that out. There's an architectural drawing. They're actually pictures, and they're huge columns, and they cover a certain amount of area. I don't think I've been to Maypen more than 3 times in my entire life. You know, I can't even remember the last time I went there. But I think it was when my Aunt Joyce died. But I don't remember anything about it at all. I sort of blocked that out of my mind. But there's supposed to be this huge, huge memorial columns and, you know, different things. And I wonder what ever became of it. So any of the listeners want to chime in on this, hit one on your telephone. And if you have some information that can help us out. Dr. Lumsden is also asking if anyone has information that she has not found that could be relevant to any of the research she does. She's not only doing it on Kingston. She has a lot of research on Rockport Gardens, on, you know, different places around Kingston that we couldn't really cover in 1 hour on the air. But it's just really fascinating to see the way she's putting some of this information together, and every one of her pages and parts of her site is a work in progress. And as she, you know, comes across some authentic documentation, she adds it to it. There's also another story about a young black man, I think he was a teenager, who was sent to Kingston prior to the hurricane. His name was Claude McKay. He was then a teenage boy, and he had been sent from his parents' home in Clarendon to Kingston to attend Mr. Pete's Trade School, which later became Kingston Technical High School. Mm. You can relate to that, Leigh?
Yeah,
you know that very well, I'm sure. But it was first Pete's Trade School. I thought it was an interesting piece of tidbit. And this is in 1907. This young man had just been sent up. He had received a wonderful send-off from the folks of the villages around his home in Sunnyville near Frankfield. It doesn't say what parish that is, but he came from Sunnyville near Frankfield. Have you ever heard of those towns?
Frankfield I've heard, but not Sunnyville.
Okay. They had wined and dined him and bestowed on him gifts of neckties, suspenders, and handkerchiefs. Then, with a new set of clothes provided by his family, he had set out in his father's dray, for Chapelton, where he took the train to Kingston. He was reading in bed in his room on Tower Street when the earthquake began. It seems to him that some great giant had suddenly crushed in the walls of the house, and he ran into the yard. There he witnessed bricks of a nearby building falling down, people running and screaming along on the road, all in panic. One man climbed the coconut tree in Claude's yard. And then he reached the top, and when he reached the top, he shouted, "I am going up to heaven, Lord! I am going up to heaven!"
Oh, boy, what is happening here?
3 shocks followed the first one. Soon fire broke out, and the city was ablaze. Later, when Claude went to the center of the city to look for his cousin, he saw bricks and rubble of buildings piled high. Many trapped persons groaning, dead bodies all around, and the stench of burning flesh. He discovered his cousin and sickened by his experience, returned home. That means his cousin died in the, you know, in all of that. Mr. Pete's trade school was demolished, and Claude's cousin, no, well, I suppose he didn't die, advised him to return home. They then visited Victoria Market, where they found a dray that belonged to a man who was a close friend of Claude's father. Having procured his transportation, they returned to Claudestown street address, collected his possessions, and returned to the market. As the dray which he rode made its way along the roads leading away from Kingston, he observed lines of people, refugees from the earthquake, with bundles on their backs. Others were coming towards the city looking for their relatives and asking the draymen for individuals they know. When Claude's transport reached Maypen, it was night, but he was spotted by his father. So apparently that must be near Maypen. Old Mr. McKay had left home to search for his son and had used the same method of other seekers, calling out to each dray that passed. Stern Victorian father he was so relieved to see his son alive that he hugged him and kissed him. And the villagers of Claude's district, who thought he had been killed, were delighted that he wasn't. They celebrated their joy at his safe return with a picnic. Isn't that a beautiful little story?
Yeah.
And she has this picture on a fine-looking young black man. Well, he was a teenager.
Wow.
But what an experience!
So wait a minute. So you're saying that he was sent off, and while he was gone, even though he was affected by the earthquake, the folks that he was staying with, his relatives, their house collapsed in, and some of them died. Is that what you were saying?
Not necessarily. You know, he apparently left the house. They talked about the man riding, climbing up the tree in his yard. He said one man climbed the coconut tree in Claude's yard and said he was going up to heaven. But then he went to look for his cousin, who apparently was in the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, apparently his yard was not in the city. He came up to Kingston to go to Pete's trade school that became Kingston Technical High School.
Right.
And then he found his cousin, collected some of his clothes out of the demolished building, which was the school. You know, in a lot of the times, children from the country or people from the country
live
in the school or near the school, because
right.
he didn't have a lot of public transportation, was not available.
Right.
But, you know, that tradition went on even in my time, because people who lived in rural parts of Jamaica always wanted to send their children to Kingston. And in my day, we had boarders. You know, people from the country would send their teenagers up to Kingston to go to high school or to learn, go to a commercial school to learn to be a secretary or, you know, something. But Kingston was always the place to come for higher learning, you know, or opportunities, just like it would be in any part of the world, I suppose, being the capital. So I thought that was quite interesting. And I'm sure that there might be some McKays who can relate to Claude. And this was in 1907 that Claude was a teenager. So there's no more historical information about what became of Claude, but I thought that was very interesting. And also, I can't remember if there was a name of the lady with the hat, but just around the earthquake itself, there's so much interesting human interest stories, which brings me to the point of Backyard Labrish. We have established Backyard Labrish for just that fact, for people in our age group to leave some human interest stories. So I'm inviting my listeners online and on the phone. I see we have a lot of listeners on the phone that are not raising their hands, to visit www.backyardlabridge.com, We have a website where you can sign up and join the community. It's a community of your peers, so you don't have to be afraid. We're all trying to figure out the internet ourselves. It's quite safe. Everything there is secured, and we don't ask for a lot of personal information. But it's a forum that you can leave your personal stories, write a blog, write some thoughts, write something that perhaps happened that you'd like to have recorded. You know, invite your friends to go view it. You can have your own private chat room and set up a chat with people all over the world who only they will have your code to get into it. A lot of neat things that you can do, so we invite you to go check it out. In the meantime, if any of our listeners online would like to interact with us and join the Labrish, just hit 1 on your notepad. So even then, you know, there are lots of other stories about, like, foreigners who were in ships and you know, were not involved in the earthquake itself, but they were able to give aid. And as I mentioned, the U.S. sent 2 ships right away to help those people. But I'm really curious about this memorial in Maypen. I wanted to know if any of our listeners could let us know if they know if the memorial is still even visible, if it's still standing, or if it's destroyed. So now I want to tell everybody that if you ever go to Jamaica, you know, Devon House is a wonderful place that you should visit. So, Leigh, I know that you're a Kingstonian, and you perhaps want to talk about what would you like to share with our listeners about Kingston that was fascinating to you when you were growing up?
Well, you know, I think basically you covered a lot of what might have happened to a young Kingstonian, because it was, even though Kingston was the largest populated city, largest by population, not by size, in the country.
I think it still is the largest population.
Right. By most standards, it's still a small place. You know most of the people in your areas, and you know, it was like a small town in the United States where everybody, most people knew each other, and you could interact with your neighbors and stuff like that. But I liked, as I was growing up, the culture of the place in itself was outstanding for a small island, and I suppose the British gave us a good foundation in the basics of culture. We had our institute and library early on. And
may I say something? I remember going to watch Charlie Chaplin movies, that silent movies, at the Institute. I remember that. My cousin and I, who now lives in London, would go to the library, and I loved the Charlie Chaplin movies.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that.
And so we were in touch with what was going on in other parts of the world through these cultural places and events. And you mentioned before a place like Carib had the leading entertainers coming down to give a show, you know.
Whoever was hot in Hollywood or in the music industry would be Jamaica would be the place they would be coming.
Exactly. And so you strive to be present at those things. The thing that I remember to this day about growing up as a my first bicycle. And I alluded to it before that I wasn't wearing long pants yet. Well, when I got my bicycle, I got my first long pants.
Ooh, so you had to have the clip that clipped the pants inside. What is that called?
No, you're stealing my thunder here.
Oh, sorry. Go on.
Because when I was going to show off this pair of tropical pants at church, after evening, you know, Sunday school, the boys would jump on their bikes if they had one and, like, roam the area.
Mm-hmm.
And I have on my pants for the first time, forgot to put the clip on. you're laughing?
Yeah, because
what happened, what happened was a disaster.
I know.
The pants wrapped into the
spool.
Into the chain of the bicycle.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Ruined the pants. Right?
This
is my first pants. So that this was a big
your
disaster.
First long pants.
And I remember that till this day, you know.
Right.
And but it was a great place to grow up. And
oh, it was. I mean, I remember my growing up in Kingston with such joy, really, joy. It's just. Wow. That's all I can say. Wow. Because do you remember that we had a fill-on hop?
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Yes, we did, because I had gone to some of the performance, but heard, I can't remember his name. I don't know if there are any Kingstonians that were might have been involved. But here's another interesting fact that I found out about the time of the earthquake in 1907. While the earthquake was going on in Kingston, a group of Jamaicans, there were, I think, six women and about 10 men, all Jamaicans, truly Jamaicans, were on tour in England doing a tour as a choral group.
Okay.
And they mentioned how they were, like, they left being prosperous people, all prosperous citizens, and when they returned to the island after their tour, you know, of singing, of performing in different parts of England, they were paupers when they came back to Jamaica because they're, you know, they were all Kingstonians.
Property were ruined.
It was a big place for affluence, even in those days, you know.
Yeah.
There were very beautiful homes. And so here's this group of men and women that were performing. They went on a tour. Can you imagine people were traveling by boats then? You know, they did not go any fast. There is absolutely no documentation on what ship took them there, what ship brought them back. Dr. Lumsden just found this article, perhaps in a foreign newspaper, that she's putting together. I don't think she has their names of the people involved in this particular choir. It was a choir or a choral group. I have so many papers that I don't remember which one I wrote that on.
Well,
however, I thought it was very interesting because if I had not done that research, I would not even have known that. Now, I know that one of my uncle-in-laws had a group, a quartet, and they always sung at weddings in Jamaica, in Kingston. In Kingston, I know, you know, they were like a professional group that if you were having a wedding, you got them to sing. And I remember him practicing all the time. Ooh, perfect love.
All right. Come on up and join my auditorium.
Right. So, and he would be practicing. And sometimes, as a kid, I found it so annoying.
There were a lot of, several groups like that. Men playing the violin and the... professional type stuff.
Right. But there was this group, and there is a picture on her website of the group. I don't know where she dug it up from, but it was very interesting because, you know, the ladies had the long skirts on and the men had the little waistcoat thing on, and I think one has like a banjo or a violin or something in his hand. But of course, they're not very clear and crisp. But they were. There was this story, like a human interest story, about them being away from Kingston and losing everything. They might have started some fund to help them, and because they were, you know, travelers and professionals, I'm sure they survived and perhaps made out a lot. Perhaps it's a good thing they were away. You know, that's another way to look at it. It's a good thing they were away performing. Because there was no sort of follow-up as to what happened to their people. And that is why I'm telling you it's so important for everybody to leave their history, leave their personal history. Because here I am, you know, in the, I say I'm in the waiting room, you know, so, and I am just getting interested in my past and my history. And I remember at times my mother wanted to share things with me when she was getting older. And I didn't have time. I told her I didn't have time. Well, I don't have time to listen to that. No, you know, what are you talking about that for? That I was almost a little annoyed that she was taking up my time to tell me about something that happened when she was a little girl. And no, I wish I had listened, because all of my, her sisters, everybody's dead. I'm at the top of the tree on her side, you know, and I don't know much about her. So I'm leaving a lot of information online. Hopefully one of my grandchildren might be interested in my history. Right now my children are perhaps thinking the same thing, because a couple of them, well, I have three children, for the listeners that might not know, two boys and a girl. And I know they're saying, you know, my mother's sort of kooky. She's doing this radio thing about Jamaica. She's all riled up about it. And I'm sure they're not listening. But one of these days, they will be interested, just like I am now, about a lot of things that I'm researching. So I'm hoping that our listeners are enjoying the Labrish. I see that they're all there. Nobody's putting up their hand. And people are online, too. But we do thank you for coming by and listening to us ramble. I thank my co-host, and I thank my loyal fan from the Bronx, New York, home of the Yankees. Don't forget to say that, Margaret.
Right. Good night.
Are there any more Yankees?
Yes.
You?
See you later.
Well, why are you leaving? No. We're not done. We still have a few minutes.
Oh,
so,
we're going to leave.
Okay. I get to Labrish once a week. So,
making me homesick here.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the whole idea, so that people will sort of conjure up some memories I want to share. So, again, I want to call out to the Kingstonians. This is your last chance. Tell us your Christmas, your Kingston stories. So I want to talk about the Christmas market, because I don't know if it has in other parts of the island, but that was one of the highlights of my growing up as a little girl. I can think far back when early Christmas morning, my mother would take me to the Christmas market, and there would be all these stalls. That time, King Street was the place to be seen. Needless to say, my husband, my boyfriend then, but he eventually became my husband, we would meet on King Street, you know, because I was 16 when I met him, and I wasn't allowed to date. So we would go to King Street and meet each other. And my friends always know, if he's walking on one side of King Street and I'm walking on the other side, we had a fight. We're not talking. You know, not a physical fight, but we were not talking to each other, so we're parading on different sides of the streets, because that was the place to be seen on a weekend. Just like how the kids now go out and hang out on the mall, I suppose that's what some of them do. Right, Donna, we would go down King Street, and it was absolutely gorgeous. It was a joy. I'm saying that to say now, people don't go down King Street anymore. Kingston has shrunk. Now, Kingston really, you know, being the capital, it has different cities. So we refer to Kingston all the time as downtown. But Kingston is the whole parish, which includes
the They now have an uptown as well as a downtown.
Downtown, right. And all the but you see, uptown doesn't have the history that downtown has.
That's right.
So I am suggesting that hopefully a generation will recapture, just like here in America, where people are going back and reclaiming the cities and restoring the buildings, because a lot of those buildings are very, you know, strong. They're not like the modern buildings that they're putting up now. And I think that I'm hoping that one day people living in Jamaica will reclaim their city and make it the proud city it used to be for centuries, but I'm especially talking about the 40s, the 30s, 40s, and 50s, because it was a beautiful city that was enjoyed by the residents, you know, in all the other, whether you lived in Rockport or Mountain View or, you know, Vineyard Town or wherever, you know, downtown Kingston was the meeting place of that period. And it was certainly a regal place to be. And it was just wonderful. Christmas Eve night, we would, the stores would be open till 12. Leah, I know you were in church, so you would be downtown shopping.
I have to be in church by 12.
Yeah, right. Well, we were downtown, and we would, I don't know how we got up so early in the morning, but I remember we would also be at Christmas Market. And in my early days, you would go down to Victoria Market, which was at the end of King Street. You know, I remember the hotel. What's the name of that hotel that was across from Victoria Pier? Myrtle Bank. I remember the Myrtle Bank days. And I remember when they had the military band all dressed up in their beautiful regalia. They have a headdress that was, you know, so cool, as the young people would say now. And they would be playing wonderful music, classical music, with such passion. Do you remember hearing them, Leigh?
Oh, yeah.
The military band. They used to play.
Up at Hope Gardens, you would take the tram and go up to the where they played at the, like, a rotunda up there.
No, it was a gazebo. It was a big
gazebo
that
the gazebo, and they
yes.
would play for people, and that was a wonderful experience also.
Oh, it was so beautiful. And you could hear the music as you tried to figure out the maze. Remember the maze that you could get lost in? And the gardens were beautiful. They were beautifully manicured, and there was a picnic area. You could spend all day there. And it was a place that you wanted to take your picture, you know, with your skirt hanging out all around you, or meet your boyfriend, or meet your girlfriends. Oh, man, it was just so cool. Really, really cool. So I want to, again, thank our listeners and ask you one more time if you would like to give us a little story about your Kingston experience, either as a visitor or as a resident. Just hit the one on your telephone, and we'll be glad to plug you in. We do have a couple more minutes on our radio time. And I would like to just mention that I haven't decided what is the adjoining parish. I plan to do the tour as trying to connect the parishes to Kingston. So there are two adjoining parishes, or three, that adjoins Kingston. We have St. Thomas to one side, Leigh, and St. Catherine to the other side.
All right. To the west is St. Catherine, and to the east is
St.
Thomas.
Yeah. And then what is
the northern boundary is St. Mary.
Okay, St. Mary. And the other direction is out in the ocean. Right? Okay. So we can't even see Cuba from there. We have to be at the north coast to see Cuba.
No, we're on the southeastern side of the island. You would
have
to go up to the northwestern side almost to see Cuba on a clear day.
Right. So next week, you sound like somebody I know seeing Russia on a clear day. No, I'm not getting political. But you are authentic because it's only 90 miles away, right?
Yep.
Okay. And the beautiful view that you have, you know, in spite of what may happen, whether we have an earthquake, a fire, a riot, or whatever, it does not mar the beauty of the island itself. Because at some of the points that we will be covering as we go into the interior, the landscaping is so beautiful. So
now that you mentioned landscape, you did not mention the Blue Mountain Range, which runs right into the boundary of Kingston.
Oh, I wasn't familiar with that it ran into the boundary of Kingston.
And also, that's where you get this good coffee.
Oh, yeah, the most famous coffee worldwide and famous.
Yep.
So, anyway, I will make a decision if any of our listeners have a preference and have information about either of those parishes. They can email us or just leave it on our website, and we'll be glad to include it in our tour of that parish. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, I think we covered some of the early schools in Kingston, one of them being the collegiate school, which there's not much information about.
You didn't mention WOMAS, which is the oldest school.
Mention any of that, any of the schools, because we've done so much of the school things for Kingston, but you were sure to mention St. George's.
Well, I have to mention WOMAS before St. George's, because WOMAS was founded in 1729.
Wow.
And St. George's was closer to 1800, so we're over 200 years old, St. George's.
So I didn't know WOMAS was that much older. That was it a co-ed at that time, or was it always?
In 1729, WOMAS was founded as the first free school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas St. George's is a private school, of course.
Oh, I got you. Mm-hmm. Right. And speaking of that, this is going backwards, but I read in some of my research where the ministers, and especially one, I think every religion was represented in Port Royal. You know, they had a Jewish minister, Catholic, Protestant, whatever. But one in particular, prior to the earthquake, was saying that God was going to chastise the city. This is so funny. Because, you know, the people were so bad. And then in the old days, or in Jamaica now, they would say, what kind of mouth? This is for my Jamaican listeners. Donna, you perhaps won't be able to relate to this, but I'll explain it after. So what kind of mouth would you say he had, Leigh? Let's see how Jamaican you are.
A bad mouse.
No.
Oh,
think of an animal.
Oh, I don't know.
Any of our listeners know? Put up your hand. Well, we say he has goat mouth. Oh, I got a listener.
Yeah.
Okay. 631, let me open up the mic. You're on 631-451. Who am I speaking to?
This is Janine.
Hi, where are you calling from?
Hi, Janine.
Hi, Leigh. How are you?
Fine.
Oh, I just want to say,
Can you relate to the goat mouth?
Yes, he had a goat mouth.
Thank you. I was getting so pumped up to give my little riddle. I'm so glad. I know Leigh wouldn't know, but I was hoping he wouldn't know.
Yes, and I'm
for another listener. So tell us a little bit about what you know about Kingston.
Well, I grew up in Kingston, too, and my parish was Old Rosary.
Uh-huh.
And I know a lot about King Street because on Christmas Eve, what we would do is we would meet our friends at King Street, and from King Street, we would have, we would buy like an American apple.
Oh, yes. And they were big and red.
And apples right there. And we would walk from King Street back to Wynwood Road at Holy Rosa Church for midnight mass.
Ah.
And it was so safe, and it was like a very happy time for us.
Oh, yes, how we savor those happy times.
Oh, and, you know, to think of, you know, Christmas Sunday with the children so dressed up and the adults and going to church, and it was just a beautiful time during our time. You know?
Oh, just beautiful. And that's why it's good to reminisce as much as we can and talk about it, so we can have some living memory archived someplace, because you know that that is not possible, though, out
you
there.
You did not send the university to live.
Where do you live?
She doesn't live in the Bronx, the home of the Yankees.
Janine, will you tell the audience where you live? We know you grew up in Kingston, but where do you live now?
I live in Long Island.
Ah, home of who?
In Suffolk County.
Okay, all right. Okay, Lace, she's still a Yankee fan.
Well,
are you
not
satisfied?
Necessarily.
Well, we want to welcome you to the show.
I grew up in Rockford in Jamaica.
Yeah, that's east.
Yeah.
And are you, I thought, Lay, you were going to talk about Bournemouth Club.
Well, I didn't, but just to go on with Rockford, The last tram went out to Rockford and was discontinued, I think, in 1948. But the Rockford had the last tram to run. You mentioned that they were closed, and then maybe for 6 months after the closing of the tram lines, there was
protest. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, protest. And the Rockford continued for a while.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I heard about the tram. I didn't really experience riding the tram,
mm-hmm.
but I heard about it from my grandmother and my mother. Yeah.
Okay, well, I can see you're not a senior as a.
Yes, I am.
Yes, it was beautiful. One of the good things about the tram is that it was open air. You know, it's not like a car
right.
where you're enclosed, and if you don't have air conditioning, you would be uncomfortable.
Right.
And it's open all around. And so as you're going by, especially by the water, the ocean, the breeze, it was just so heavenly. I just can't explain it. You know, because when you're going by the water.
That's if you get an empty tram.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. So you could ride around the tram. I think once you got on tram and gave your ticket or paid your fare, I mean, you could ride for hours if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So this avenue tram that went around in a circle, it went down a certain path. Then it had a long path by the water. You know,
you know
near Paradise.
The trams had numbers. You know.
Oh yes.
To recognize where they would travel.
Right. They didn't have names. They had numbers on them.
Numbers.
So you know the number of your tram when you boarded.
There was one that did go down, like to. Towards the sea there, Paradise Street, I think.
Paradise
it was.
Street, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And go along that street, I don't remember the street, and past the prisons.
Uh-huh. And the madhouse. And the madhouse. Don't forget the madhouse.
Yeah. That was actually a different route. That was the Wynwood Road.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
It was called the Bellevue.
Right,
okay.
Bellevue,
yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
And we had the Black Fence in Kingston. You remember? Does anyone know what the Black Fence was?
No.
Okay. Well, you know, we had an outbreak of tuberculosis.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
In Jamaica. You don't remember that, Lay?
Mm-hmm.
We had an outbreak of tuberculosis. It was brought in by a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
And we really had a bad outbreak. And when, you know, when people were sort of in their last stages, like now you have hospice for cancer patients or seriously ill patients with tuberculosis, because it's an infectious disease, you had to be isolated and all of that. So the people who were in the last stages of their lives would be sent to Black Fence, which was in Kingston. One of my girlfriend's mother was a nurse there, I remember.
Yeah, I've heard.
And it was, the fence was actually painted black. But also you knew that once people were transferred there, that they were not going to come out.
Right.
So we had the madhouse on one side, the black fence on another side. But in between all of that, there was so much beauty and entertainment and just wonderful, wonderful life when I was growing up. So I want to thank all my listeners. We have a board full of listeners for listening in to our little Kingston story. And we want to ask you to come back next week and visit with us and hang out. And do tell your friends that they can. The shows can always be archived. Just go to the link and click on it, and all of the shows are always there. You can cherry-pick the ones you listen to. And we just want to ask you to mention or click a little button that asks, that tell us which one of the shows are your favorite, because that gives us a little more rating on our Blog Talk Radio platform. So do visit often, and as we would say, walk good and come back soon. So I want to say bye-bye to all our listeners. Thank you, Leigh, for being my loyal fan, and I want to welcome our new fan and ask her to come back and visit with us, even though we won't be discussing Kingston. So, again, I want to say good night.
Thank
you for calling.
Bye. Bye, Donna.
Bye, Leigh. Bye.
Bye.
Bye,
Janine.
Bye.
Bye, Janine.
Bye. Nice talking with you.
Okie dokie, and come back next week. Do tell your friends to come visit us.
I will.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you all for listening.